Illuminati, devil worship.
But it had to have been the eggs.
Nothing happens by accident, nothing is as it seems, and everything is connected.
I call it the paranoid style. I'm a regular person.
Normal American nutjob.
Hey, sister.
Hey, sister.
I love a conspiracy theory. Tell me what you know about Bohemian Grove.
Tell me what you know about MK Ultra.
Tell me what you know about the paranoid style. Listening to this, you're the NSA. Hey, sister Bohemian.
Hey, sister.
Tell me what you know about...
On the first night of the annual event, after dark, a small boat crosses the man-made lake towards a group of hooded figures waiting at the base of a 30-foot owl statue. The high priest, dressed in silver robe and a red cape, receives a human-shaped effigy from the ferryman, and it's placed at the foot of the shrine. This effigy is Care, called Delcare. The high priest intones,
"The owl is in his leafy temple. Let all within the grove be reverent before him. Lift up your heads, O ye trees, and be lifted up, ye everlasting spires. For behold, here is Bohemia's shrine, and holy are the pillars of this house. Weaving spiders, come not here. Hail, Bohemians!
Hail, Bohemians!
By the power of your fellowship, Dull Care is slain. Our funeral pyre awaits the corpse of Care."
But before Dull Care can burn, the ceremony is interrupted by a voice.
"Fools! Fools! Fools! When will ye learn that me ye cannot slay? Year after year ye burn me in this grove, lifting your puny shouts of triumph to the stars. When again you turn your faces to the marketplace, do you not find me waiting as of old? Fools, fools, fools to dream you conquer Care."
The priest implores the owl for adjuration.
"O owl, prince of all mortal wisdom, owl of Bohemia, we beseech thee, grant us thy counsel."
"One flame alone must light this pyre, the pure eternal flame that burns within the lamp of fellowship upon the altar of Bohemia."
Dull Care is finally set alight and burns. The members cheer. Fireworks are set off. Music plays. I read in one account that the song of choice for quite a few years was "There'll Be a Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight."
Well, that's just fun. Just good, clean, totally not weird fun.
It sounded pretty creepy to me. It's kind of like a frat boy meets summer camp meets amateur dramatics.
So anyway, where was I? Oh yes, sister, tell me what you know about Bohemian Grove.
Thank you for asking. The Bohemian Club was founded in 1870 by a small group of newspapermen in San Francisco. Apparently, there was a lot of debate about the name of what the club should be. The traditional definition of a bohemian is a socially unconventional person, especially one who's involved in the arts. But just prior to, and then even more so during the Civil War, journalists began describing themselves as bohemians, and it became at the time synonymous with newspaper writer. There's a journalist, Bret Hart, who wrote for The Californian, and he went by the pen name The Bohemian.
I thought you were going to say he went by the pen name The Hitman.
That was a different Bret Hart. The club did end up going with Bohemian, and Oscar Wilde, upon visiting the club in 1882, is reported to have said, "I never saw so many well-dressed, well-fed, business-looking Bohemians in my life." Article 1 of the Constitution and Bylaws of the Bohemian Club is as follows. "This organization shall be known as the Bohemian Club. It is instituted for the Association of Gentlemen connected professionally with literature, art, music, the drama, and also those who by reason of their love or appreciation of these objects may be deemed eligible. The membership later expanded to include politicians and affluent businessmen.
Yeah, so the original members of the club considered themselves men of talent, and they would get together, drink heavily, and discuss art and literature. So when you're having this much fun out in public in bars, naturally, they started to garner attention from other patrons. And the attention they were getting were from industrialists, business owners, wealthy individuals. They were not artists. However, the Bohemian Club saw that these new members could help foot the bill for their hedonistic lifestyle. And so they were permitted to join and became known as men of use.
Money, 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 money.
The men of use would eventually come to dominate the membership ranks of the Bohemian Club. Although, as stated in the club's bylaws, 10% of the membership should be accomplished artists of all types. Hmm. Some of these members have included William F. Buckley, Dick Cheney, Bing Crosby, Clint Eastwood, John DuPont, Henry Kissinger, Colin Powell, David and Nelson Rockefeller, Karl Rove, Theodore Roosevelt, Barry Goldwater, Merv Griffin, Charlton Heston, and of course, Herbert Hoover, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush. Now, if you're keeping track at home, that is every single Republican American president for the last almost 100 years, with the exception of 46 minus one, who I've heard has never even received a guest invite. Because even baby sacrificing dickweeds have standards. So up until the Clinton administration, even if the Democratic presidents were not invited, members of their cabinet were. But starting with the Clinton administration, not even members of his cabinet were invited to join the Bohemian Club.
And that seems like a real shame because this seems like Bill Clinton's kind of party.
There is a video of Clinton at a speaking engagement and a heckler shouts out, "Bill, tell us what you know about Bohemian Grove." And Clinton's response was, "Is that where they all stand up naked around a tree? Because I'm not invited.
But I'd love to go if anyone is listening. I promise not to bring Hillary."
Initial Bohemian Club meetings were held at the home of member James Bowman, who wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle. His wife got tired of the group smoking cigars in their dining room, so she kicked them out, and in the 1930s, they relocated to 624 Taylor Street in San Francisco, a six-story masonry building at the corner of Post Street and Taylor Street, two blocks west of Union Square. The clubhouse contains dining rooms, meeting rooms, a bar, a library, an art gallery, a theater, and guest rooms. A masonry crest over the entry of 624 Taylor depicts the club's mascot, an owl, with their motto, "Weaving spiders come not here." That's a line from William Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream and basically means that the Bohemian Club is a place where the powerful men can come to chillax. And I assume get shit-faced and let go of their worries and business life.
Okay, so of course the owl is a symbol of wisdom. So it makes sense that the intellectuals would want that symbol to represent them. It's also a nocturnal animal, which is representative of hidden or secret knowledge.
Yeah, and they can twist their heads 180 degrees.
Right. And in Greek myths, the owl was associated with the goddess Athena. She is the goddess of war and wisdom.
Athena, by the way, would not have been allowed to be a member of the Bohemian Club, being a lady.
I mean, this seems innocuous enough. Of course, these heads of states and businessmen consider themselves wise. But where do the weaving spiders come in?
Yeah, where?
Well, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of the story of Athena and Arachne. Arachne was a beautiful maiden with humble beginnings, but she became a crackerjack weaver. So people would travel from nearby towns just to watch Arachne weave, and it was said that it appeared as though the thread came directly from her fingertips. As time went on, Arachne was starting to become a little arrogant and boastful about her skills, and she refused to acknowledge or thank the gods for her gifts. So Athena challenges the girl to a weaving contest. At the end of the contest, not only has Arachne made an impeccable tapestry, Athena cannot find one flaw, but the tapestry depicts the gods themselves as abusive, drunk, and lecherous.
And oh.
Athena blows her top and turns Arachne into a spider and curses all of Arachne's descendants to the same fate. From Metamorphosis by Ovid, it says, "Immediately at the touch of this dark poison, Arachne's hair fell out. With it went her nose and ears, her head shrank to the smallest size, and her whole body became tiny. Her slender fingers stuck to her sides as legs. The rest is belly, from which she still spins a thread, and as a spider weaves her ancient web." The reason I bring this up, specifically, is not only is it good visuals.
Very good.
But it is believed that when Ovid was writing this story, he was using it as an allegory of the relationship between art and tyranny. Ovid had just been exiled by the Emperor Augustus, which is interesting when you think about the Bohemian Club that was started by a bunch of artists and writers and would eventually be totally infiltrated by, well, men of tyranny. Mm-hmm. If you think about the club's mascot being a direct line to the goddess Athena and their motto referencing the need to keep weaving spiders away, does that mean that they see themselves as gods to be worshipped and feared by the masses? And goddess forbid you thumb your noses at them or portray them in any way that they do not see fit.
That seems right.
Having said that, there are other precedents of ancient secret clubs using the owl as their symbol, including the Schlarafia and the Order of the Illuminati.
In addition to the club in SF, the Bohemians have something called Bohemian Grove. Bohemian Grove is a restricted 2,700-acre campground.
Just to give you some perspective on that, that's about 3 times the size of New York Central Park.
That is amazing, especially considering that they purchased this in 1898 for only $27,000. The campground is at 2601 Bohemian Avenue in Monterio, California, near the Russian River, and it's about 75 miles from San Francisco. Writer and journalist William Henry Irvin said of the Grove, "You come upon it suddenly. One step and its glory is over you. There's no perspective. You cannot get far enough away from one of the trees to see it as a whole. There they stand, a world of height above you, their pinnacles hidden by their topmost fringes of branches or lost in the sky." The main encampment area consists of 160 acres of old-growth redwoods. Some of those redwoods are over 1,000 years old and stand over 300 feet tall. In the last 2 weeks of July, the Bohemian Grove hosts a more than 2-week encampment of some of the most prominent men in the world. Only active members of the Bohemian Club and their guests may attend, but no women, including camp valets or minors, are allowed to stay after dark. The grove itself is broken up into approximately 180 camps or sleeping quarters with names like the Hillbillies, Mandalay, Cavemen, Semper Virens, which I thought sounded totally evil, but it just means evergreen, and the Owl's Nest.
I read that every campground has a different owl sculpture outside their cabin, and the canopies of the trees are so dense that it's dark almost all of the time, so there are also campfires burning in front of each campground all day.
It sounded like there's a kind of hierarchy among the camps. They're technically all equal, but some are more equal. Do you think there's a lot of infighting and bitchy backstabbing?
100%. I think that these are the shadiest bitches that ever existed.
Yeah, I can't believe there's not a lot of that.
Even if you don't necessarily have something against an individual, I bet there is a lot of, you know, the Eagle's Nest Cabin thinks they're better than the Silverado Squatters. Yeah, let's go knock their owl over and piss on their campfire.
Yeah, and I bet that copious amounts of alcohol don't help.
Oh, but that's the only part of Bohemian Grove that I am all on board for. The customary 7 a.m. gin fizzes served in bed.
That's nice. I did read that every campground has their own signature drink.
There is this one drink they called Nebutol because it's basically like the barbiturate of the same name.
Wow.
It's hot cocoa and rum, which sounds delicious.
Yes.
But the guy serving the Nebutol wears a doctor's lab coat.
Every article I read mentioned the prolific outdoor urination around the camp, which if you're drinking gin fizz at 7 a.m., it kind of makes sense.
Apparently, that is such a problem that there are a particularly popular grove of redwood trees outside the dining area, where they had to put up a sign that reads, "Gentlemen, please no pee-pee here."
Oh, God.
Is there anything else to do there besides drink and pee?
Well, if you need more stuff to do, there are several spaces for recreation and entertainment. The Grove Stage is an amphitheater with seating for 2,000. The stage extends up the hillside and is also home to the second largest outdoor pipe organ in the world.
Ooh.
There's an outdoor dining circle that seats approximately 1,500 diners simultaneously. Also, a multi-purpose clubhouse on a bluff overlooking the Russian River. In the interior of the grove is an artificial lake that's overlooked by a moss and lichen-covered owl shrine. The owl simulates a natural rock formation, but it holds electrical and audio equipment within it. This is the location of both the cremation of care and the daily noontime lakeside talks.
Okay, let's talk about that 30-foot owl in the room.
I did see some mention that the owl is Moloch, but I was reading about Moloch, who's mentioned in Leviticus in the Bible, and that Moloch is a bull-headed god worshipped in Phoenicia, who was into ritual sacrifice of babies. It doesn't seem like Phoenician literature or spiritual texts mention Moloch as a god. That was a word that they used to mean king.
A writer, Mark Walter Evans, wrote an article entitled Inside Bohemian Grove, in which he made reference to Moloch in regards to the owl at Bohemian Grove. He did not mean that the owl was Moloch. He was simply pointing out the similarities of worshiping in front of a giant animal statue and offering sacrifices to it. And then in, I believe, the early 2000s, radio talk show host and human meatball, Alex Jones, he latched onto that name and just ran with it. The man doesn't understand metaphor. Go figure.
Oh, I wondered how that got conflated, because it does seem like they're two very different things.
So at the start of this podcast, we did a little reenactment of the ceremony that kicks off the annual Grove encampment, which is called the Cremation of Care. The ceremony involves an effigy called Mr. Dull Care.
Mm-hmm.
The effigy has a metal skeleton that is covered with paper and fabric.
Flammable.
He's carried in a coffin to a big bonfire in front of the owl shrine, and they attempt to burn him, but the persona of care is like, oh, hell no. You can't get rid of your cares that easy, idiots. Thankfully, the helpful and sacrifice-hungry owl says, use the lamp of fellowship, and poof, Mr. Dullcare is burned up. There have been many different iterations of this ceremony since 1881.
Wow.
But the script for the current ceremony was standardized in 1923, and it has become the basis for every subsequent ritual.
For many years, a recording of the voice of the club member, Walter Cronkite, was used as the voice of the owl during the ceremony. I was thinking it was like a couple of guys standing on stage, but it's 250 people, which is 10% of the total invitees. And that doesn't even take into account the lighting and sound technicians and the musicians. Plus there's costumes and pyrotechnics. It's a production.
I read that George H.W. Bush was given the role of one of three frogs whose only line was to say one syllable of the word cremation.
Ugh.
So, cremation, cremation. Much like the popular Budweiser commercial from the early 90s, Budweiser,
yeah.
Which makes me wonder, which Anheuser-Busch ad wizard was attending the Bohemian Grove? It's just so weird to think of the public personas of the people partaking in this ceremony. They're a very conservative bunch.
Yeah.
And they're the kind of people that are mouthpieces for the idea that America is or should be a Christian country. But then they're out there dancing around in the middle of the forest, play acting as pagans. And don't get me wrong, I am all for pagan rituals and dancing around in the middle of the forest. If the Secretary of State were to come out and say, I am a pagan, I believe in sympathetic magic, I burn effigies, I celebrate the solstices, I am all for that. I think it's great, but I just hate the hypocrisy of saying one thing and doing another.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a quote from George H.W. Bush when he accepted the presidential nomination in 1988. He said, I'm guided by certain traditions. One, that there is a God and he is good. And I was just thinking, if he had gone on to say, and that god is a giant owl who appreciates human sacrifices, I think the speech would have gone over a little differently.
And don't get it twisted, although they can talk about how this is just performative, it is still a pagan ceremony that includes a mock human sacrifice. And I think a lot of people's concerns becomes if the sacrifice is ever not mock. The Franklin Committee was started by two Nebraska state senators to investigate financial crimes within the Franklin Credit Union, and specifically the crimes committed by the credit union's manager, Lawrence King. The investigation would lead to heinous abuse allegations against King, and as a result, several possible victims were interviewed. One of those alleged victims was a young man named Paul Benacki. Benacki recalled a summer in 1984 when he and another teenage boy were flown in a private jet from Omaha to somewhere in or around Sacramento. Yeah. From there, they were driven out to a forest with tall trees. They were brought to a clearing where there were men in hoods and a naked boy in a cage. Benacki's story includes the darkest, most evil, and degrading actions you could ever imagine, and it resulted in the eventual murder of the boy in the cage and the defilement of his corpse, all while being filmed. But the interesting part about Benacki's claim is that he says this all happened at the base of a 30-foot-tall owl statue.
Oh, my God. And this was like 1984. So there's only the vaguest proto-internet at that time, which would not have been available to most people. So how could someone know about a 30-foot freaking owl statue in the middle of a forest inside this protected grove unless they had actually seen it or someone told them about it?
And even if someone had told them about it, it begs the question who had that knowledge to share. Especially as you delve deeper into Paul Benacki's story, since he claims that a lot of this abuse involved very high-ranking men, including then-Vice President George H.W. Bush. Can you even imagine you're camping, you get a little lost from your tent, you come through a grove of trees, and you come across this scene?
Luckily, you'll probably never make it that far because the grove, unsurprisingly, has a crap load of security. Not just because the caliber of people that attend, but probably also because of what they're doing while they're there.
And they are not only concerned about maintaining their privacy from outsiders. The patron saint of Bohemian Grove is Saint John of Nepomuk. He was the saint of Bohemia, which is modern-day Czech Republic. He was the priest that heard the confessions of the Queen of Bohemia, and he was drowned when he refused to divulge any of her secrets. During the encampment, the statue of Saint John sits near a hollowed redwood tree near the center of the grove, making the sign of silence, the finger held up to pursed lips. And he stands as a reminder or possibly a threat to all the camp attendees.
During the rest of the year, that St. John statue lives in the library at the Bohemian Club. So even St. John gets to go camping once a year. In addition to the ceremonies, excessive drinking, and public urination, what else are they trying to keep within the grove? Maybe the lakeside talks, which take place daily at 12:30 at the man-made lake. These are significant informal talks, many on public policy issues that had been given over the years by entertainers, professors, astronauts, business leaders, cabinet officers, central intelligence agency directors, future presidents, and former presidents.
So much for keeping the weaving spiders away. Some of the talks that have been reported on include a talk by General John Chain, commander of the Strategic Air Command.
A cool name.
The general spoke on the country's desperate need for a B-2 bomber. The same year that Chain gave his talk at Bohemian Grove, $23 billion were spent on the B-2 bomber program. Could be a coincidence. Other talks have included one by Navy Secretary John Lehman called Smart Weapons. In that speech, Lehman said that the Pentagon estimated that 200,000 Iraqis had been killed by the U.S. and its allies during the Gulf War, which up until that point, those numbers had never officially been released. A speech in the early 90s by then Defense Secretary Dick Cheney
called Major Defense Problems of the 21st Century, and another speech by former Attorney General Elliot Richardson with the disturbing title of Defining the New World Order.
Hmm.
In 1995, President George Bush Sr. used his time during the Lakeside chat to tell everyone that he thought his son would make an excellent president someday.
Wrong.
Richard Nixon once said that his favorite speech he had ever given in his career was a Lakeside chat.
Huh.
When he was president, he had intended to go to Bohemian Grove and do another Lakeside speech, but all his handlers were like, nope, nope, hell no. The last thing we need is to put a president out in the middle of a forest and for the American people to find out that he's speaking in front of a crowd and no one knows what he's saying.
Yeah.
So they put the kibosh on it. Nixon sent his regrets to the club in San Francisco. Although Nixon was also a little two-faced about his time in the club. When the Nixon White House tapes were released, there were some really disparaging quotes by Nixon about the club, which includes language we will not repeat on this podcast. I will just include the following part of it. Nixon said, quote,
I can't shake hands with anyone from San Francisco.
Oh my God. What a dick, Nixon. Nixon doesn't seem like the type to be wearing a robe and chanting on stage. And maybe that's a sign that he just wasn't comfortable with himself. Come on, Dick. Be more comfortable with yourself.
Maybe not too comfortable with yourself, Dick. Speaking of the Lakeside chats and dicks, these Lakeside chats are held in the relative light of day, open to any member or, I presume, guests of Bohemian Grove. So what kind of plans were being discussed during the smaller, more intimate moments around the camp? In July 1967, Richard Nixon had a discussion with then-California Governor Ronald Reagan. Nixon told Reagan that he planned on running for president, but he would not run against any of his fellow Republicans. The two men agreed while sitting under a giant redwood tree that Reagan would only enter the primaries if Nixon began to falter. I realize this seems small, but no doubt the course of history took some strange turns because Nixon did, in fact, become the next president.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other concerns about this organization is the fact that members are allowed use of those grounds all year round. They have the privacy, secrecy, and shrouded protection available to them at all times. In September 1942, J.R. Oppenheimer, a chemist from UC Berkeley, and Ernest Lawrence from Berkeley's Radiation Laboratory met with James Conant, the president of Harvard University, Lyman Briggs, the director of National Bureau of Standards, representatives from Standard Oil and General Electric, and lieutenants and majors from the U.S. Army. This was the earliest stages of the Manhattan Project, which led to the creation of the first nuclear weapons, which were used just 3 years later on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan.
Hmm.
Honestly, my feelings are best summed up by a woman named Mary Moore, a resident of Monterio. In the 1980s, Mary Moore started to get a sense of the caliber of people who were attending the Bacchanalia in the forest, and she became concerned. She said, quote, when powerful people work together, they become even more powerful. So Mary Moore founded the Bohemian Grove Action Network and started organizing protests outside the gates of Bohemian Grove and even began performing a resurrection of care to symbolically reverse the cremation of care. Her point being, should decisions like the next president, how much to spend on killing machines, and the New World Order really be made after you've burned your care? Shouldn't you have some sense of your fellow man before making these decisions?
Yeah, or fellow women who aren't even allowed in the club.
Right.
It also kind of decimates the separation of power idea, because in the Grove you can have judges, presidents, congressmen, senators all conversing freely and getting on the same page for whatever they're talking about. Whereas in the confines of the United States governing structure, those entities are supposed to make their own independent decisions and only approve something once they've all come together and voted on it publicly. But in the Grove, they're not subject to the scrutiny of the people that they're making these decisions for.
Yeah, there has been a complete press blackout in the Grove since about 1930.
A press blackout of a group initially founded by and for journalists. The irony.
The scant information that the public has received about the Grove has come from a handful of journalists and at least a couple of crazy people that have tried to infiltrate the group to varying degrees of success. In 1982, a Time magazine reporter allegedly infiltrated the camp with Mary Moore's help, disguised as a waiter. That story never ran in Time magazine, which might be explained when you fast forward to 1991 and the San Francisco Bureau Chief for People magazine named Dirk Matheson infiltrated the encampment, but was recognized and escorted out by a Time Warner executive. Time Warner being the parent company for both People magazine and Time magazine.
Yeah, and not surprising he would be recognized, since there were many media mucky mucks who were members or guests, such as Franklin Murphy, former CEO of the Times Mirror Corporation, William Randolph Hearst Jr., the heads of the Scripps Howard newspaper chain, the president of CNN, and a former publisher of the Los Angeles Times. And, let's not forget, the original, although inferior to you, sister, voice of the owl, Walter Cronkite.
The call is coming from inside the house.
The call is being blocked from inside the house.
There have been some successful infiltrations and articles about Bohemian Grove. In 2009, Vanity Fair writer Alex Shumatov wrote a piece regarding the possibly illegal and definitely careless logging of old-growth redwoods on the Grove's 2,700 acres. Of course, the aforementioned meatball, Alex Jones, who cut a hole in the side of his camera bag and blended into the sea of white men and managed to get really terrible grainy footage of the cremation of Care. And the definitive account, and basically my main source for all this research, was an article written for Spy magazine in 1989 by Philip Weiss entitled Masters of the Universe Go to Camp.
That is the perfect title, Masters of the Universe Go to Camp. Rich Guy Burning Man might have worked also. When you have people at the highest levels of power and wealth cutting loose, what does cutting loose look like for them? Could you imagine being an employee there? You must witness some really awful behavior, not just like worshiping an owl god. I'm talking about conspicuous consumption.
I read one account by a man who said he had worked as a waiter during the encampment, and he told a story about having to tell Jeb Bush that he couldn't have a milkshake. Jeb Bush started demanding to speak with management.
Did he demand to speak to the giant owl?
I'm sorry, Mr. Bush, sir. We only serve milkshakes from 5 to 9.
I mean, I'm not trying to defend Jeb Bush here, but really, they couldn't make him a milkshake?
I mean, apparently, it was after the meal and the kitchen staff had already started to prepare the dessert for the evening, so they temporarily put a hold on all other requests until the dessert course could be served. And Jeb Bush couldn't fucking wait for dessert. He wanted his milkshake.
And then, you know, if you give Jeb Bush a milkshake, then Dick Cheney's going to start demanding some Metamucil and who knows what else, embryos. It's like 100 of Veruca salts.
But I want a milkshake now, Daddy.
Speaking of golden eggs, how are they paying for all these milkshakes?
Well, the Bohemian Club is a 501c7 social organization, which means they are exempt from paying federal taxes.
Of course.
Bastards. As far as we know, today's current initiation fee is about $25,000, and there are about 2,500 members at any time. So not even taking into account the monthly dues, that is over $62 million. But in 2017, the total revenue that was reported to the IRS was $10 million and total assets up to $20 million.
Yeah, that does not seem right. The land alone is probably worth about $500 million in today's market.
Stranger still, this amount has been consistent since the 70s. It has never fluctuated up or down.
Convenient.
All those members who are CFOs, CEOs, billionaires, who better knows how to hide money?
Yeah, I read that the final play that they put on at the end of the encampment, the hijinks, costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you factor in what they're shelling out for booze, Metamucil, and owl maintenance, I don't know, it still seems suspicious. I saw something that a club member got into trouble for trying to declare the Bohemian Club retreat as a business expense on his taxes.
Oops.
Would you go to the Bohemian Grove if you were invited?
I am assuming I'm a man in this scenario?
Yes, obviously. Okay.
Then yes, because I love the forest and creepy shit. Would you go?
Yes, I couldn't resist. And I want my milkshake served in an owl mug.
Free refills with purchase.
Hey, listener, thank you for tuning in to the Paranoid Style podcast. And a special shout out to the NSA, our first and most loyal listener.
We beseech thee.
Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any topic suggestions for the show or any tales to share, please email us at theparanoidstylepod@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at theparanoidstylepod or on Twitter at style_paranoid. Opening theme music provided by Tony Molina. You can hear more of his music at tonymolina650.bandcamp.com.